cut the music. Like, I got a producer working the Switch Boys. Cut the music, man. Cut the music. Welcome to the Choose to Joy broadcast. This is your host, Brother Eric, and this is Incarcerated number 7. We got a 15-minute show. We actually got 13 minutes left. Short show today, but let me bring Trey on in. Trey, are you there?
Man, I'm here.
Good. Keep moving. Man, okay, what I want to do today, Trey, we left off talking about what can we do as far as helping the situation on mass incarceration, the new Jim Crow, the war on drugs. What can we do to stop it, you know, what's going on? And you sent me to this website yesterday. They was talking about it on, like, what was the network they was on? It was like Jet Talk or something. Jet Talk.
No, that was an interview on the Huffington Post with Senator Cory Booker.
Oh yeah, Huffington Post. Okay. And one thing he said was, we need to get the awareness out. We need to make people aware of what's going on. And I was like, well, we're kind of doing that. Well, I want to start at the basics of what mass incarceration is and the war on drugs. How that's fueling mass incarceration. But what is it, Trey? Make it plain and simple. I'm in the first grade. I need to know what it is.
Well, the war on drugs is directly what causes the mass incarceration. It is a war aimed at trying to alleviate and intercept drugs, deter drugs with harsh sentences, and heavily punish those who are involved in, you know, drug use or drug distribution. And this has fueled the mass rise in incarceration rates. Because, like I said, over 70% of the people in our prisons in America are there for nonviolent charges. And so that is the mass incarceration.
How much money is being spent by the government to fuel the war on drugs?
Well, if you just look at just the war on, you could break it down many different ways, but I heard yesterday in some interviews like $250 billion if you add up cost of imprisonment, policing, and all of it all together. It just depends on how you break it down. Like I said, I read a statistic that's $50 billion alone just on marijuana, just the cost that the taxpayers are paying to house, prosecute, and police people that are committing what are now, you know, crimes concerning marijuana. So it's a humongous amount of money being spent on this, and nothing's happening for it except people are being incarcerated, and it's affecting everybody's environment and society negatively, whether they know it or not. And so it's a big problem. I think awareness is a big part of it because people really don't see it as a problem, but they don't see how counterproductive the current system we have is. For number one of the reasons that a lot of, you know, conservative, you know, congressmen and lawmakers are coming on board is because just on the basis of the finances, they see that we're spending a lot of money for something that there's no return or no proven benefit or positive outcome. The amount of drug usage, drug distribution, drug charges, it's not going down. So we're just spending endless amounts of money doing it. And then, you know, there's strong cases that it's actually just causing more crime because of what happens when you do get caught up in the system. So it's pretty bad, and it does need to be addressed, and people need to be aware of it.
Now, the
and
way
as far as what can be done.
Go ahead.
You asked about what could be done. That's a different subject. It's both. Number one, stop the war on drugs as we know it today.
How do we stop it? What can we do personally to stop the war on drugs?
Well, I think awareness, the big part of what we can do is raise awareness so that, you know, our electorate can make, can put pressure, or, you know, our legislators can know that they have the public will behind them in passing laws that are in favor of altering how we deal with the war on drugs. And so that would be a big part of awareness, but in terms of the actual laws that can be passed, would be stopping the war on drugs as we wage it now, the current way we wage it, and criminal justice reform. A lot of these mandatory minimum sentences, a lot of the guidelines, prison industrial complex, how it works. I question even
Let me ask you this, Trey, because it kind of makes me feel funny as a Christian to try, if I'm on the outside looking in, to try to stop a war on drugs. I'm against drugs. Is there some kind of middle ground where I heard one person say they don't think drugs should be legal, but they do think it should be decriminalized. Is that a possibility, or does that make sense to you?
Yes. There's, again, like I said, decriminalizing it is not synonymous with no regulation at all. So there's lots of different ways of regulating the uses, distribution, consumption, standards of what, in the drugs. And so it's a lot of different ways. It's not, a free-for-all, it's legal type of deal. So, yes, there's some mean in between there. But, again, I would say that funny feeling that you have, I get what you're saying. I do believe it's misled because I am not advocating that we do not wage a war against drug usage. I'm just saying that the war in terms of how we think about it and the way, we've been waging it thus far is a very ineffective way, and it's actually counterproductive to the result that we want to have in the end, which is less drug usage, a safer, a safer environment, economy, healthier people, and the whole nine yards. So when I say that, I want to make sure that I'm not pro-drug usage of any drug. Like I said, me, myself, I don't use any of them. What I'm saying is that the way we do it, the way our criminal justice system works, the way private corporations, private prison companies work, where they have financial incentive to hold more and more people incarcerated, and there's more money made the more they incarcerate people, this produces an environment where they spend a lot of money lobbying Congress for laws that are not beneficial to society as a whole. They're just beneficial to their business model.
That's the part I don't like. That's the reason why I would want the war on drugs to stop. It's because the way it's being handled is just not correct, man. Talk about some of the things that happened on your case as far as how the money is flowing with all the people that was on your case, and I wish we had more time to talk about it, but there was nonviolent charges. Nobody had a gun on them. Nobody was a threat to society as far as being a burglar or a murderer or a robber. But they came down so hard on you guys, and I'm like, and then when I get robbed, I want the people who robbed my house, I want them locked up. You know what I'm saying? But talk about the way that it's being handled, because I believe that's the reason why I personally would want the war on drugs to end.
Well, two things that you made me think of. Number one, specifically regarding our case and the way it's handled, yes, again, it goes back to the mandatory minimum sentences. Drug school zones were a big part of our case where, like it is almost everywhere, they can attach a school zone charge to any drug charge you have, meaning that you travel through a school zone or some way or in enough distance in relativity to a school that you could be charged with the school zone, which the intent of that law is to keep drugs away from school as a deterrent for people to even, deal on school. So nobody in our case, showed up at a playground or met with somebody on the playground and did a drug deal on any playground.
I laugh because somebody got a school zone in y'all's case because they sent a box and it flew over a school in Nashville. So the airplane flew over the school, and they gave them a school zone charge. Man, I'm like, come on, man, they're playing games.
And see, the purpose of that is that those mandatory minimums prohibit you from taking these types of cases to trial. When my people went to go see a lawyer on my behalf, one of well-known lawyer in Nashville who knew the system well, knew the DA, and looked at my charges, he said, man, he's facing upwards of 60 years on all these charges, if he were to go to trial. That's what he's facing. And if he was convicted as he's charged with these school zones, anything he's convicted of, he has to serve at 100%. So you're facing 60 years at 100%, something that you'd be better to murder somebody. And so that's why I said it's an inverse of true justice because, again, like I said, going back to the analogy you drew, what happens is, and again, not that I'm making drug dealing right, but you can take a person who's out there selling marijuana to provide for their family, to make money illegally, granted, I'm not saying it's right, and this person is taken out of society potentially for 60 years, and their child grows up without a father, without the income earner, that household, that family, those young boys are much more likely then to be the person who's going to break into your house. And so when you suck out and you create a system where, you know, there really are no second chances, and if you do get a second chance, the barriers are so insurmountable. You know, it's a very – I was watching yesterday, there's a guy who got out of prison. He served 40 months on a first-time – and that's another thing that happens with, again, with black individuals on a first-time offense. This guy went to prison for 40 months and got out and got his degree, became a lawyer, became an attorney, was a member of two different bar associations, but still could not vote, still could not get certain types of public assistance, still could not get certain business licenses. He was still had – a second-class citizenship that was based on, you know, a mistake that he made, and the way you're treated after making that mistake, it carries on and continues to have effects. Like this gentleman said, he just happened to have a good family support system, but the more this perpetuates, the less likely, you know, families can even have a good support, because this usually goes on for decades. As we know, if your father went to prison, you have a greater chance of going to prison, and so it tends to go down. I was
and that's one of the things... Let me say this, and that's one of the things that I was figuring that we could do to get things changed is we could get out and vote. And a lot of the stuff I didn't even pay attention to, but we could vote because the people that are on your – it was on your case was the people that we felt like was behind things not being sound and right and fair on your case was your DA – and the judge.
Mm-hmm.
And you can almost vote these guys out. You know, enough people get out and vote.
You know, there's a lot to say. Yeah, there's a lot to say about, again, but that's a big part of it, is that once you go through this system, one of the biggest parts
vote.
Of your rights is stripped away. You can't vote anymore. And so your ability to influence legislation and policymaking, who represents your views in your country, is taken away from you forever, or in a lot of cases, at least, you know, for a dozen years or more. And so it's absolutely, you know, it's absolutely insane when you think about, man, the consequences and how we have picked and chosen this war on drugs and how it's executed and the negative. And again, I'm not against a war on drugs. I'm not against that. I am against it being executed incorrectly in a way that actually produces more drug uses, that actually guarantees that people are going to further offend. And so I'm for a war on drugs, but if we're going to have a war on drugs, we have to have a real war on drugs, which is a war on the lives and the circumstances, the environment, the opportunities that people have to be productive. That's the real war on drugs. Not this war we're having. It just will never work.
Trey,
we got
20 seconds left, man. I don't know how we got this far with 15 minutes. We could talk about this subject literally for probably about 4 hours straight. But, man, we'll hook back up tomorrow. Sorry it's a short show today, but we'll pick it right back up tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll definitely
Choose
have
Story
a long
broadcast.
Show tomorrow.
And this is Brother Eric and I with Brother Trey. And this is Incarcerated No. 7. And T, we just got to get back at it tomorrow, brother.
We will do it, man.
All right, man. God bless you. Thanks for tuning in. We are out.